This is The Guardian.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
In early February, dairy cows in Texas began to look a bit sick and produce less milk. By late March, officials had confirmed what was wrong.
The safety alert is in place after some Texas dairy cows tested positive for the bird flu.
Despite the virus ravaging the global bird population, H5N1 turning up in cows wasn't something virologists were expecting. And as it emerged in increasing numbers of dairy herds across the US, more bad news.
A person in Texas is being treated for the highly contagious bird flu. That's according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. It's the first human case of the disease in the state and the second in the U.S.
Thankfully, his case was mild, no more than a bout of conjunctivitis, a common symptom of bird flu in humans. But he was lucky. Last week, the World Health Organization's chief scientist, Jeremy Farrar, said this animal pandemic is of enormous concern. The virus has extraordinarily high mortality rates in humans. So today, what's going on with bird flu in cows? And are we ready if a virus like this makes the jump and starts spreading between us? I'm The Guardian science editor, Ian Sample, and this is Science Weekly. Ed Hutchinson, you're a virologist at the Medical Research Council, University of Glasgow Centre for Virus Research. Here on the podcast, we've been following the spread of bird flu over the past few years. We've seen it move into mammals too. There's been outbreaks in mink farms. More recently, it caused the deaths of thousands of seals and their pups. And it's even been detected in domestic cats. So was it much of a shock, it turning up in dairy cows in the US?
This was a real surprise. So influenza is very good at jumping between different species of animals, particularly this type of influenza virus, what we call influenza A viruses. But strangely enough, cows weren't normally one of those species. There have been very sporadic reports and obscure bits of the literature of cows being infected with influenza viruses, but it's not something that happens very often with influenza A viruses. They have their own viruses, the influenza D viruses. We'd thought cows weren't part of the picture. So these viruses turning up in cattle was a real shock.
And so far, the cows have been experiencing mild effects of the virus. But of course, the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, are monitoring this situation closely. As of the time we're recording this, they've confirmed it's been seen in 33 herds across 8 states. But it also now appears as if the virus could have been spreading for months before it was detected, and that it potentially started from a single spillover event. This is all still being confirmed as scientists analyse the data, and there's clearly a lot we need to figure out. But what do we know right now about how it's spreading?
Sure. So there's three questions in there, which is, how does it get into the cows? How is it moving around among the cows? And then can it get from the cows into anything else? There's, to be honest, still a lot of unknowns about all of those. Our best picture at the moment is that this virus was circulating in birds and passed into cattle from birds. And it's perhaps worth highlighting that this took place in the US, where long-range movements of cattle are an established part of how the dairy industry works there. So the virus may then have moved in cows from one place to another. Is it spreading between cows? And at the moment, that's looking fairly plausible. And how it's spreading between cows, influenza we think of as a respiratory virus, but actually these cows don't seem to be shedding influenza through their respiratory tracts. Surprisingly, perhaps, it's turning up in the milk. But also, is it infecting anything else locally? And we do have a plausible case of a farm worker with a mild influenza infection and some possible infections of birds nearby as well, potentially also cats, although I think that's still to be confirmed. And then there's the question of, can it go any further? So it would need to get from a cow into either a migratory bird or traveling human. At the moment, that seems to be quite a hard thing for it to do. So there's a lot of things to look at in terms of how the virus is moving around here to try and predict where it might go next during this outbreak.
The USDA has been in the hot seat for its handling of the outbreak so far. So perhaps you can explain to me what they will have been doing and why they're getting criticism.
In a situation like this, there's two main ways in which we can get information. One is the real boots on the ground investigations of visiting the affected sites, talking to people, swabbing equipment, things like that. The other thing which can be done is to take viruses from the animals and sequence their genes. And the reason this is important is that viruses like influenza, it's an RNA virus like SARS-CoV-2, and as I'm sure people will remember from the COVID pandemic, these viruses mutate incredibly quickly. So each gene sequence is going to be different from the next, and the differences between them can be used to build a family tree of the viruses, which can show how they connect up and show, therefore, how the virus is spreading around. But also, you can look at those sequences and say, well, are there any signs of the virus adapting to grow in mammals? So people are keen to look for those changes and to connect it to the information map where the viruses are coming from. So far, people have been, I think it's fair to say, a little bit frustrated with the data available, both initially because only a small number of sequences were released, so building those detailed family trees was very hard, but also because when a lot of sequences were released very recently, they were released with very limited data on where and when they were collected. So connecting those family trees to those investigations in farms has still been a bit difficult. But it is also quite easy to sit in my case, a university in a different continent and say, it'd be really nice to have this information now. There are practical realities people have to face when getting that information as well.
And what exactly is the kind of data that scientists want to get their hands on? What will they be looking out for from the USDA and what will they be doing with it?
There are a lot of questions which we would like to know the answer to. I think the two most pressing ones are, in this particular outbreak, is this virus just what we call a spillover infection from birds into cows, which will infect these cows but then burn itself out and not go any further? Or is it starting to adapt to mammals? But slightly more broadly than that, even if this does come to an end as an outbreak, it's shown proof of concept that this H5N1 strain of bird flu can jump into cattle. And there are a lot of cattle. So we need to really understand what its capabilities are and to understand what the risks are of it happening again elsewhere in the world.
As you mentioned, Ed, the virus has turned up in the dairy cow's milk, and earlier this week, the FDA confirmed that H5N1 particles had been detected in commercially purchased pasteurized milk. The FDA didn't say how many viral fragments they'd found or where the milk was from, but they are now trying to grow the virus from that milk. Ultimately, though, they said they still believe that the commercial milk supply is safe to drink. So this is moving quickly and there are plenty of unknowns, but how worried should we be at this stage?
We've been really worried about avian influenza viruses for a long time. So they first presented as a problem in 1997 in Hong Kong, where there were a collection of human deaths associated with exposure to highly pathogenic avian influenza viruses, these H5N1 viruses. And then since the early 2000s, these viruses have been popping up at various points around the world and repeatedly making people very, very ill, and in some cases sadly killing them. So we've been paying attention to this for a long time, kind of waiting for it to take off, because we know that influenza viruses are unusually good at doing that very difficult thing of jumping from one host species to another. And up until now, it's never happened, which highlights the fact that we still don't really understand these viruses as well as we would like to. I think at this stage, this needs to be taken seriously. It's concerning when a virus which is capable of developing those abilities of jumping into a new species and getting good at growing that species spends a lot of time hanging around in the right circumstances. But it's important to emphasize that at this stage, there's also no direct sign of anything which would be what we're really worrying about, which is human-to-human transmission.
Obviously, we don't want it spreading between humans, but actually the step before that that scientists really worry about is it turning up in pigs. This H5N1 hasn't been found in pigs yet, but in past zoonotic influenza outbreaks, pigs have been the animal source that has caused us problems. People might remember the 2009 swine flu pandemic that ended up with about 284,000 excess deaths. So why is that? Why are pigs a bridge between other animals and us?
One of the things influenza needs to do when moving from growing in a bird to growing in a human is it needs to tweak the bits on the surface of a cell, what we call receptors, that it grabs onto. So there's a particular sugar that influenza grabs onto to get into cells. And there's a different type of sugar used in humans and in birds. Pigs use both. So it's a good training ground for the virus to get used to growing in a human-compatible environment. It also means that pigs can be infected by both human and avian influenza viruses. And this is important because unlike most viruses, influenza viruses have a genetic trick to speed up their evolution, which is basically a very primitive form of sex. Their genes are divided into physically separate segments, a bit like our chromosomes. And when two parental viruses get into the same cell, you can get a virus coming out which has some genes from one parent, some genes from the other. So specifically, you could have a virus which gets most of its genes from a human virus, but the genes encoding the proteins on the outside of a virus, which are the targets for the immune system, are completely new. That's what a process we call reassortment. And that generates a virus which has jumped several steps forwards in its ability to adapt to humans, but still is completely novel to our immune systems, would not be protected against by vaccines, which people normally take for seasonal flu. And pandemics have typically happened through reassortments like that. But one thing that this outbreak in cows shows is that influenza can do lots of things that we hadn't necessarily anticipated. So we will be keeping an eye on pigs, but that doesn't necessarily mean that pigs are a requirement for influenza adapting further.
Ed, a recent study found that the majority of scientists think the next big pandemic will be influenza of some sort. Generally, how prepared are we for influenza pandemics? And what does being prepared actually entail?
With influenza, we are more prepared than we were for SARS-CoV-2, because unlike for SARS-CoV-2, we already know how to make influenza vaccines. We already have drugs which have some degree of success in treating the virus. We already have a reasonable understanding of how to look after patients who become severely ill. But at the same time, were there to be a pandemic, we would still need to be able to produce vaccines at enormous scale very quickly, even if we have a better idea of what we need to do. Obviously, there's big infrastructure capacity issues there. We'd still need to deal with the huge pressures which disease outbreaks put on people individually, on healthcare systems, and on economies. So we don't really want to get to that point if we can possibly avoid it.
What about the UK specifically? Are we ready?
So I think there's a lot of things we can draw on here in the UK. There's a lot of expertise in researching influenza viruses and in carrying out surveillance against influenza viruses. There's a lot of accumulated wisdom in the NHS. And a really nice example of that working occurred last year. There was a case in Yorkshire in England where someone became infected by a rather unusual swine influenza virus, which was picked up when they went to their GP, not feeling particularly ill, but in a monitoring process that was identified. Now, that didn't spread any further, but that sort of ability to spot things happening straight away and respond, and everyone did start paying lots of attention to it, is the sort of thing we need to be able to continue to do well. However, there's no way around the fact that were there to be a pandemic, it would place major pressures on everything.
And just finally, Ed, we obviously need to keep monitoring what's happening with this virus, H5N1. How can we be better prepared if it does begin to spread between humans?
We really need to pay attention to what the virus is doing. So where it is, how it's changing, are there any signs of it adapting, and to step in where possible to limit any spread that is occurring. We can also start investing now in developing seed vaccines, so candidate vaccines, which could be rolled out if this took off. This is new and odd. So even if it doesn't take off, it sets a precedent, which is troubling for what could happen in the future. Anything which gives us better understanding of the virus in general is always going to help.
Ed, good to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Many thanks to Dr. Ed Hutchinson. You can keep up to date with our reporting on bird flu at theguardian.com. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by Madeline Finley. It was sound designed by Tony Onachuku. And the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.